Welcome to Manager Tools. This week, first meeting, new direct series, Family First, part one. The questions this cast answers are, how can I speed up my new direct's onboarding? What should I tell my directs when they start? What are the most important messages to share with a new direct?
Hi folks, this is Mark. Welcome back. It's a new year, 2022. We get further and further away from the year that shall not be named with a number. And we're not going to have any ads this cast. We're just going to say Happy New Year. We hope you had lovely holidays, however you chose to spend them, hopefully with family and friends. And we look forward to another year of serving you, and we hope your year is prosperous, ethical, and successful. Happy New Year.
Welcome, everyone. Our discussion today is about another one of our first meetings with our new directs. When we have a new direct, we're bringing them in, we're onboarding them. We have a series of meetings, and one of them is this one, which is Family First, and that's going to be our topic today.
And there's a special guest on the show.
There's a special guest on the show.
I think this is the second time I've been back on Manager Tools since you and Sarah took it over, and I had a hoot when you guys emailed me or Slacked me and said, would you be willing to fill in for one of us? Because one of you was traveling. And I said, yeah. And Sarah or you said, it'll be nice to have a guest on our cast.
Well, you know, is there a very special guest?
Yeah.
Just, you know, not a normal guest. We don't actually allow normal guests. We only have very special guests.
We don't. Yeah. What, like four or five of them in the last 17 years we've had, other than me or you or Mike or Wendy or Andrew?
Yeah, you should feel special.
For sure. Oh. I try not to feel special, that's for sure.
Do you enjoy me telling you how to feel? Is that fun for you?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It's yeah. Really good.
That's a good way to go through life, tell other people how to feel.
Oh, sure. Sure. I think it's really helpful when I tell you as well. It obviously makes you feel that way.
Exactly.
Fully, you know, now that's how you feel. So that's good. But interesting, at the beginning of this cast is I've been having a weird start this morning on our recording, but our topic is about beginnings and new hire beginnings, new team member beginnings. And beginnings are delicate times. Someone first comes on board. When a direct first starts on your team, it's useful to communicate to them what's important to you, what's important to your organization. And today's topic is a continuation of our series on managers' first meetings with new directs. Previously, we've covered results, relationships, over-communicate, be timely, tell the truth, support the team, and ask questions. Today's chapter is Family First.
Yeah, and I might add that I think we said a couple of times in the series that those are the sort of core that we would recommend. Manager Tools has some additional ones. Each of you as managers, as leaders, might have your own that maybe something that you thought of as a pet peeve 15 years ago has turned into one of your rules of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're lucky at Manager Tools because we generally only hire people who are familiar with us, that are aware of the community and aware of our work and aware of our guidance and so on. But that's not the case for the vast majority of people in the world. And you've got to communicate culture and how you think, what you feel, what you believe is important in the workplace is part of the culture of your team.
Mm-hmm.
And you might as well tell them now rather than saying, oh, you'll figure it out after you've been here a while. I've been telling companies for years they need to spend more up front. You know, unfortunately, it's a sad commentary. I hope this isn't taken politically, but the school system in the United States has been declining for years. The graduation rates, the reading and math rates are terrible. And if companies want high quality people working for them, and the quality of their raw material is declining, they're going to have to polish or shine that raw material.
Mm-hmm.
Because human beings are actually getting better. It's just that we're less likely to graduate as fully knowledgeable citizens. We're less likely to graduate knowing as much as we used to know, even though there's other stuff we are learning, but that may or may not be useful to an organization. And so some sort of effective professional training, if your company is not doing that, you've got an obligation to teach your folks the basics. There are some people who will say, I don't ever want to hire or have on board new hires. I want to bring somebody from somewhere else in the organization because I don't want to spend time acculturating them. That's dumb.
Also, I think that might not take into consideration the fact that the other managers in your organization might not be training them in the culture.
Oh, they're not. Oh, they're totally not.
Yeah, the idea that, oh, well, if I bring someone in from over there, they will have this understanding is
yeah,
an assumption
but
about...
But they'll know a lot more, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think there's managers out there who abdicate their responsibility to teach their directs things, simple things like how to run meetings and stuff like that. And they just leave it up to organic observation and then, oh yeah, they'll put this in to their practice just from having observed it. And I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah. A buddy of mine told me, he called this the multiple ovens in the kitchen argument, which is the vast majority of managers have a kitchen with 100 range tops all turned on high. And they turn their directs loose in it and watch while they burn their fingers. And he says, well, they touched that one. They'll never do that again. Oh, look, they did it over there. They'll never do that again. Like, dude, seriously? I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. But for many managers, I'm too busy.
Yeah. So in support of our content day, we're going to talk about, this is part of a weekly series of meetings. It's the first meeting of the morning. It's about family first. And here's how it might sound. Here's what to say.
Yeah. Over the past 17 years, it has not surprised me anymore, but I always take note of the fact of how many people write in after we do a podcast where we write out what we would say as sort of a script. We don't intend these things as a script. Feedback, maybe in the beginning, a little bit of a script. Delegation, yes, but for the most part, no. But people really, really like the outline items, which we describe as here's how it might sound. but of course, in our voice, and in this case, I wrote this cast, so it's in my voice, but you'll be given a lot of topics and be able to put it together in your own way. So it feels like it comes from you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you said part of a weekly series.
Yeah.
And we've done this before, but we just need to do a quick overview of the weekly series.
Sure. Pretty simple guidance here. This meeting is part of a series of meetings about your expectations and the values of you and your team that you're sharing with this new direct to help the new hire not get off on the wrong foot, right? We're communicating expectations,
yeah.
What that means, not only in terms of culture, but behaviors for them.
Yeah. And getting off on the right foot doesn't just mean getting the work done.
Mm-hmm.
It means knowing what's going on. Understanding what various acronyms mean, understanding why A is more important than B without anybody having said it, understanding that there are certain times of the year that are going to be busy and other times that are not. All those kind of things make a difference, and you don't know that you don't know them until they're a hot stove you put your hand on.
Too many new hires, their performance is hampered forever, right, in the organization,
yeah,
by a lack of ability to conform to unspoken norms of behavior in the team. And it's partially because those norms are never clearly communicated.
Dude,
they're
unspoken.
Just assumed. Yeah.
They're unspoken. And
right.
Everybody knows them because they learned them. And then they say to themselves, well, they should learn the way I learned. No,
no,
dudes, that's one of the fundamental falsehoods of professional development and corporate life. When you learn something, you're supposed to make it easier for the person behind you to learn it faster than you, so they come up to speed faster than you, so we get more capacity, more capability, more productivity. That's how it's supposed to work. If we were supposed to wait for everybody to learn every lesson on their own, we'd still be riding horses down the street. And everybody talks about how they'd love to go back to the Old West. My next door neighbor in Fredericksburg, Texas, 30 years ago, remembered when he was a little boy and the streets were still dirt and there were still horses on them. This is in Texas, surrounded by ranches and farms. And he said the smell was horrible.
Yeah.
And the city paid a guy to clean up horse poop. So we're supposed to make the next generation better than we are, faster. Don't make the same mistakes we did, mm-hmm. right? If that were the case, we'd let kids play in the street.
Yeah.
But we've learned.
Mm-hmm. And it's the communication of those learnings that's often the most helpful in terms of that speed, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's an understanding that there's a lot of learnings that the human race has lost, and simply because some of it isn't communicated, it's not written down, or it's not codified somewhere. And so if you are wondering how to help them get better faster, one of the things to do is simply communicate. And those who get
talk to them.
Will yeah. be able immediately to see how that is something they can use, how it affects what they do. But not communicating, it just leaves them in the dark. It's almost like when you first start and you feel as if you're being forced to go through trial by fire. And partially it's because they are, right?
Yeah.
People, you know, no one's telling them anything. And they're like, well, you'll figure it out. Well, okay, it's going to take 6 months, or we could just tell them in 6 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
And most managers think, hey, when somebody new starts, the hard part for the hiring manager is over. If they're hiring. They're hiring. Yeah. That part's over. Okay.
They dreaded hiring. Now it's done.
Yeah.
And now magically, this person will be as good as the person who used to be in their job. This person will be, you know, highly effective very quickly. And they don't do the onboarding enough justice, and it takes longer.
Yeah.
And the block men die in unstrategic defiance of martial law because they're still used to just being men and not block parts.
So this is our part of a weekly series, and we're yeah. going to have it as the first meeting of the morning.
Yeah. And if you want to send a message that a meeting carries some special meaning, ask it that it be. Send a meeting request if you're doing it on Zoom, or mm-hmm. send an email if you're in the office, if you're lucky enough to be in the office, and say, hey, first meeting tomorrow morning, maybe what time do you get in? And or you know, next Tuesday or whatever, probably mm-hmm. tomorrow morning is already booked first thing. And tell them it's the first meeting of your day as well. And tell them the topic of the meeting so they yeah. will have thought about it the night before. And if somebody's just starting in the first 6 or 8 weeks, these meetings with you are some of the most important meetings, if not the most important meetings he or she's going to have in their first few weeks. Their deliverables, their work product, is not going to be the most important thing they do. The learning is. And the more you can condense learning, the more you can teach them the important things faster, the better. So send them a meeting request, by the way, as opposed to saying, hey, look at my calendar, look at your calendar, send me a time. Because that will also send a message that this is really important. I mean, think about it. How many of us get meeting requests individually from our boss that we haven't talked to him or her about before? And the topic is in there.
Not many.
Not many.
I think, too, having this first part of the day, first thing in the morning, doesn't just communicate that it's important. It also gives them time to think about it the night before, ostensibly when they're with their family.
Oh,
they're
good.
Home.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
If they've gotten a message request from their, or a meeting request from their manager that says meeting topic family first, and they're at home with their family.
Yeah.
And the context there, I think, is going to be helpful for them to prepare for this meeting, which I don't know that they really need to be preparing. They do, though, yeah. need to think about the context and think about it before they come in first thing in the morning.
When we say family first, what does it mean? I wanted to spend a minute on this. At the manager and the direct level, between you and your directs, even if you're a senior manager or director and you think about you and your direct team of people, not your entire organization, most of our professional lives is about the work and getting the work done. That's the currency between managers and their team members. But for each individual, if you think about, if you get rid of the duality of manager direct and you think about the individual, any individual, whether they're you think of them as a director or a manager, work is only one part of their life. There are family and friends and hobbies and school and spirituality and vacations and weekends and on, to say nothing of books or golf. And too many of us managers, thinking about all of our directs and thinking, God, there's so much there, try to simplify it. And we think only about the professional relationship, the work, in terms of our relationship with our directs, mm-hmm. while those directs are living a complete life with all those other things, work being a clearly important part of it, but work being only one part of it. And the fact is, we're going to get better results and retention if we're sensitive to their whole lives. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying we're going to roll over and let them do what they want. I know there are already people, we're recording this in the year 2021, and I have no doubt that there will continue to be interest. It came up in the news a few weeks ago that there's a push for a four-day work week. Yeah. If you want a continuation of the hollowing out of the human soul, encourage humans to not work, to not contribute, to not stretch, to not risk, and so on. But again, that just shows that people want more out of their lives than just work. And the world would be better if our lives were fuller and richer and included both work and many other things as well, including charity, by the way. But for us managers, their work comes first. And then on the other hand, for them, their family comes first. It's this classic conflict of ideas, this friction that leads to the cynicism you hear when people say, family first, with, you know, with doing Joey air quotes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
yeah,
right? Like, family first. I could just see Joey saying, what does that mean? And I think if I asked everybody on this who was listening, does your family come first? And the answer, I'm sure, would be, yeah, totally, right?
Yeah. For almost everyone, I think that that is the case.
Right.
And I don't know how we can act as if or believe that for our directs and their directs and so on, that their family doesn't come first if we feel that ours does. They're not fundamentally different from us.
Yeah. Most of us would say, well, I do think for my directs, their family does come first, and that's good. Mm-hmm. But then you go a step further and you start realizing with our role power, we start pressuring that, which, by the way, is okay, but some people are very uncomfortable with pressure. Don't we ask them to do more work than they have time to do? And the answer is, of course we do.
Yeah, we do.
And we notice, and we are positively commenting about those people who, quote, go the extra mile, unquote, or, quote, stay late, unquote.
Yeah.
And we do that because we're given more work than we can do by the organization. The organization intends to overload us.
Right. And we feel that we don't have a choice, rightly. We feel that we don't have a choice to say
we
no.
We can't say no. Right, yeah.
And our directs feel largely the same way.
Yeah.
And we've been saying for years the concept of work-family balance is misleading. It's a misleading idea. We oughtn't try to balance things that are not equal. Work and family are not equal. Family is first. Work is second.
Yeah, and for other, and by the way, we're only ranking those two.
Yeah.
We're not ranking everything else. Some people would say, no, God is first and family is second and something else is third and then work is fourth. And that's a completely legitimate way to live. And we ought to be thankful we have those choices because we're free. But in terms of the two, yeah, work comes in second.
And we're balancing two things in this equation. We're attempting to, or stating them as if they're balancing two things which are unequal.
Well, the whole point of balance, right,
is that they're equal.
The scales are equal. Like, dude, they're not equal.
They're not.
The only way they can be equal, the only way work and family could be equal is if you move the fulcrum in the lever, right? You slide the triangle that the seesaw, the teeter-totter is on, right, toward which one? You'd want a shorter moment on what's more important. So you'd slide it toward family.
Yeah.
That's the only way you could make them equal. But nobody thinks about that.
And if we are trying to, you know, balance, move this fulcrum arm, two things that are unequal.
Yeah.
We feel guilty in our efforts because we're destined to worry about work when we're spending time with our families and guilty taking time away from our families when we have to work hard.
Yeah. It becomes this sort of dilemma between black and white. And if I'm doing one, I can't be doing the other. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing one, I'm stealing time from the other. And we do it to ourselves on both sides. I wish I were with my family when I were at work, and I wish I were at work sometimes. I have work to do, and I like my work, and I want to do it. It feels creative. I feel like I'm accomplishing something when I'm with my family. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And remote work, which we're dealing a lot with right now because of the timing of this recording, it makes this challenge even more obvious because we are working at home. The stories of burnout about working from home are a little bit misleading, right? They're caused in part by the stress any change causes, and a change going from the office to at home. Lots of us just didn't know how to work from home. And it can be very tough. It can
it's
be.
It's new. I mean, it's different. Change. By definition, all change causes stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And much of the workforce working from home is still learning how. We're still transitioning. We're still in the throes of that. Learning how to set boundaries, to truly walk away from your desk in the corner of the living room, these are some of the things that people are dealing with. Learning how to avoid the temptation to just get some work done real quick, like right here, like I've got my laptop. Or I'm going to sit on the couch with my laptop while we watch this movie. That's one I hear a lot.
Yep.
The burnout story, though, still affects us, regardless of the components.
Yeah. And by the way, the burnout story is made worse by people saying, I feel burned out, which, by the way, burnout used to be a very specific thing that psychologists and psychiatrists would potentially diagnose. And it had specific physical symptoms, mm-hmm. like weight loss. And burnout is a little bit like trigger warnings in that these two things have been co-opted into, it's like making a prescription drug into an over-the-counter drug. Suddenly, anybody can have it. It doesn't take a mm-hmm. medical doctor to diagnose you. You're just saying, I feel burnout, therefore I am burnout, which is not exactly true. And the media fans that flame because we don't report successful takeoff and landings of airplanes, and it scares people to read about workplace burnout. And so it gets eyeballs and clicks and so on. So therefore, suddenly burnout is a thing.
Yeah. Directs who are still learning to make this transition, and even directs who are still learning that we've just hired,
right?
Are stressed. They're stressed, and over time, that stress, lately exacerbated by limits on our freedoms to go where we want during a pandemic and largely global lockdown, and do what we want in our free time, adds to the burdens of managers. So even though this is going to happen, regardless of how far out you are from the pandemic when you're listening, currently now, the stresses associated with this are higher.
Yeah. And look, if you go to the next level, if you think about it not from the standpoint of a video watching an individual working at home, if you think about it from the standpoint of organizational principles, we learn that when it comes time to do the work and time and people balancing, there's no balance. We're never going to get it exactly right. The way organizations are built, folks, if you don't know this, this argument was settled decades ago with all kinds of data. There's either going to be too much work and not enough people, or there's going to be too many people for not enough work. The problems associated with too many people and not enough work are far worse than the problems that come with too much work and not enough people. This is absolutely a case of the lesser of two evils, because it would be great if we could have a perfect amount of work for the perfect amount of people. But of course, the world is a dynamic place, and so you couldn't hire and fire fast enough, mm-hmm. and things aren't monolithic enough to how you're going to do it. So therefore, you have to choose one or the other. And what we discovered is having not enough work for too many people leads to really cancerous, metastatic awfulness and selfishness. And well, it's one of the reasons why government and academia are noticeably, I mean, not orders of magnitude, but, you know, it's not 10% or 20%. It's more like 80% less well-managed than large corporate organizations for many, many reasons, that being one of them. So what that means is we're all going to have too much work to do. And so are the people who work for us. But we say our families come first. In fact, we don't just say it. We feel it. We believe it. We live it. We try to anyway. And so if we want to be effective, trusted managers, we have to acknowledge the dilemma, at least mentally in some fashion, rather than ignore it. And the moment you start thinking that way, you realize it's far better to talk about it in order to help ourselves, but to a greater extent, our directs navigate the challenge they're facing.
Thanks, y'all. That's all for today. We'll be back next week with part 2. Bye.